Hi, and welcome to episode 469 of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Sean and Brian. Today, we're excited to have Gary Rogowski back as our guest. Gary is a custom furniture maker, author, educator, director of the Northwest Woodworking Studios, just to name a few accomplishments. I could go on and on, but I needed to cut this introduction off. But welcome to the show, Gary, or welcome back, should
welcome
I
back,
say.
Yep.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. Thanks for having me. You forgot my Little League exploits, you know?
Oh, man.
I put out a third base. He was big. I'm right at him.
I got gold star in first grade.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good to have you back, Gary.
Yeah, great. And before we, Gary's got a couple of new things, or at least one new shop series coming up that we want to talk about that I think we mentioned on a previous podcast and some more detail. But before we do that, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. First off, this company called Robox has a new product out called the X Drill. And this is supposed to be the drill reimagined. And it's kind of interesting. One of our esteemed listeners and past guests forwarded on to me. And it's like, hey, is this a gimmick or something else? So it's kind of unique in that it's got lasers all over it. So, you know, you always want a, you know, cordless drill. It's a cordless drill with lasers all over it. But also on the back of it, has a little function so that you can basically, it's kind of like crosshairs. So you can actually drill perpendicular with this, you know, just looking at the back of the drill. And you can also set it at an angle. So, you know, that's what got me interested as far as being a chair maker is you could set this thing to, you know, at a 20 degree angle. As long as you kept your crosshair centered, it was drilling at that 20 degree angle. Looked pretty interesting. And then it's got lasers on it, so it can measure both the height of the drill and how far it is, like from an object, like from a wall or something like that. So if you were drilling a series of holes. The reason I think it also might be a gimmick is the color scheme. It's white with gold accents, like a gold button and gold little things. It looks kind of janky from the point of view.
It is a Kickstarter, and so part of that might be just style to catch audience. I get it, and differ from the greens, reds, yellows, blues, what, you know, all the others out there. I mean, it's just another color, but I get it. It's interesting though. There's a lot of tech in this.
Mm-hmm.
A touch screen digital display on the back of, you know, it's like
Bluetooth.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, you know, it's been a running joke of hand tools. I mean, this is obviously a power drill, but like the laser guided saws, you know, that never really are needed, but like if it works, I think it's real. I mean, that's pretty cool. And the question is, what would you pay for something like this? I mean, they show all sorts of applications, you know, construction, you know, crafting. Yeah. There's a lot to it. For a chair maker making spindle, you know, drilling, like that's maybe a push too far for a dedicated thing that you're going to trust. But if you're hanging something and you need to, you know, drill a hole into the confidence of drilling a hole to hang a picture, you know, on your wall when you're setting a screw to hang that wire on, you know, that it's going plumb in. I mean, you know, it's pretty much guesswork otherwise. Yep. People have used lasers before.
Well, it looks like I think it's retail, you know, of course it's discounted on the Kickstarter program, but it looks like retail, this thing's going to be almost like $437, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere in the $400 to $500 range, which is obviously pricey for a battery operated.
Yeah,
does it make coffee?
I hope so. Yeah.
It can stir it for you.
It can stir your coffee. Yes,
you know, they have. If you're bored and need a laugh, watch the 3.5 minute, whatever it is, commercial that's on their website. Mm. First of all, the guy looks like Nick Jonas. It's terrible acting. And they do all this to say, like, we're going to drill level. But if you watch the guy, he's drilling at an angle into the wall.
Okay.
One thing that did, and I would be impressed if this works, but one thing that really caught my mind, it says it has a built-in depth stop. So you can tell it, I only want to go an inch and a half. And then the drill, the chuck's supposed to stop spinning at whatever depth. If that works, that could be something.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, basically, what the way I looked at it is they took, you know, Nova has that drill press that has all those features
and auto stop, and then it'll start backing up or whatever. And
this has all the features that that drill press does, but just in a handheld.
In a handheld drill.
Yeah, because it can even change its speed based on the material you're drilling into and the size of the bit, just like that Nova thing. Could the other interesting thing I thought is it actually has torque settings in it. You can actually set it to, you know, certain pound feet of torque, which is
okay.
Interesting. I don't know if you could use it like a, you know, a torque
driver. Yeah, I mean, is that equivalent? I mean, I don't know on my drill that's when it goes from 1 to 20 and then hammer, you know, that's technically a torque setting.
Yeah.
It's something like that. That's probably nothing new to a
but it's just being able to set it to actual pound feet measurements instead of like a number 3 or a number 4 or whatever.
I'm seeing this thing that it's got, you know, depending on material, you pick a material and it'll tell you it'll dictate the speed that it rotates.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of tech in this.
Yeah.
Maybe too much. The gimmick idea or the sense that it might be a gimmick is the fact that it's all of this stuff that, you know, is out there in different forms and maybe would be wanted, but all at once. And so how much would you trust
it? Yeah. Well, this company does make like the ultimate in laser level thing that,
so they're in that market already.
They're in that market already. Okay. It's like a $400 laser level thing. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Has a lot of these same bills and whistles, at least from the placement. You know, I think that's where they got the idea to put a laser in the bottom of the thing and then one on the side of it where it can turn. But yeah, it's got some interesting things. But, you know, before I invested that much money, I'd want to make sure it's been drop tested a few times, some good reviews.
Did you see they actually have a drop counter?
Yep.
The number of times you supposedly drop it, it remembers that for you. This is very sophisticated, you know, stuff. You drop it off a 10-foot A-frame ladder, you think that's going to be accurate anymore? I don't know.
It all depends on how.
And they made another crazy claim that since it's Bluetooth, they say if somebody steals it, you can lock it down so it doesn't turn on. Bluetooth range is what, 30 feet?
Ish. Yeah.
How are you going to catch somebody before they get out of that Bluetooth range? So
that's a good question.
This is a little bit of snake oil to me. But I if somebody buys one of these and you get it, please let us know because we want to know what actually works, what doesn't.
You just make sure you get a 30-day return guarantee on that sucker too.
I haven't weighed my 12-volt battery operated drills lately, but a lightweight claim of 3.5 pounds, is that light for a drill?
I think it's heavy.
That seems heavy.
Yeah, unless you put like a big 5 amp hour battery or something.
Yeah, my big Milwaukee is probably about like that. That's one thing. If this does work and it's not a total gimmick, so it'd be nice to see some, you know, more traditional tool companies.
Yep, absolutely.
Some and of these features. Yeah.
And this is going to be a slow burn as this is an active Kickstarter and they're trying to fund. Does this say if they've gotten that far yet? This is actually since May.
187,000 Canadians been raised so far.
Right.
I'm not sure what their goal was.
Over 400 backers. I don't know what their goal is.
30,000 Canadian goal. So they funded it over 413 backers.
Yeah. So it'll come to market and we'll figure this out. It's a very interesting technology, kind of like SawStuff when they first came out, 10-ish years ago. It was, you know, there were skeptics. And for good reason, because it seems like, that's really cool. Is it real?
Well, here's my skeptic. It says estimated delivery, February 2021.
Ah.
So take that with a grain of salt.
But there was an update May of this year. So maybe there's something.
Yeah. And a lot of the reviews that are people talking about it, they were talking about it back in July or something. This never, you know, obviously this never made it into the woodworking community, so to speak, because the first I heard about it is just a few days ago. So,
Their update list, you know, like, hey, parts are coming in, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I know I've heard of failed Kickstarters or Kickstarters that got backed and never happened, and that does happen. But this has update December 22, February 23, May 23. Okay, maybe it's going to happen. Maybe it's not going to happen this month, but maybe it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see it come to market and actually see real on the ground testing. Marketing is always very good on these things to show that it can do everything.
Yeah.
Include stir your coffee.
Yeah. We just got to make sure. Yeah. It makes the coffee too.
Yeah. I want it to look shiny when it's dangling from my mirror in my car and also be accurate.
Yeah.
At the same time.
All righty. Well, let's move on. The next one is just a little technique that Chris Hoare's posted over at Lost Art Press called the Juicy Lucy. And it is basically a technique that David Savage came up with to improve dovetail joints. So basically when you're assembling the dovetails, you just flood it with hide glue and it swells the fibers and will help improve the joint, at least cosmetically. And so Chris has been using it on chairs. So where the tenon goes through the arm of the chair, he's just using that same technique, and it's working really well for him. And yeah, I've had some, you know, joints like that where the tenon's coming through the seat or through the arm or something like that. And it's like, yeah, it didn't quite fill all the way in, and you might have to add a little bit of filler or something like that. Not a problem if you're painting the chair, but it might be an issue if you want to keep it natural.
Yeah.
So this is pretty interesting little technique, and I had thought about using it for chairs, but I think I'll probably be giving that a shot next time I glue something up. I wish you would have posted this a few weeks ago.
If you're going to scrape it, this should be fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't penetrate, right?
Not very much.
Not into like face grain.
Yeah, yeah. And it's high glue, so some warm water afterwards will clean up any excess. Yeah.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was an interesting technique. So as always, I forgot to mention this at the top of our woodworking news. I will have links in the podcast description. So just look for them there. And next up, which I thought was also another little neat idea, is Lee Valley, and I'm sure you can get this other places, is selling the Narex Uniscraper. And it's a little scraper, kind of like a little bit longer than a pencil. And it's got like a round end at one end and a square end at the other, just to help you clean up in small little areas. Hmm. And it looked like it's not something you could probably pretty easily make something like this, but at only $7.50, I figured it's a nice little thing that you might want to pick up when you haven't quite got that free shipping figure. You know, I think it's $40 for free shipping. So if you're sitting there at $35, you might want to just throw one of these on there.
I would have seen this. I think I ordered something like a week ago, and I'm getting a fro tomorrow. Yeah. I think it's getting delivered, and it was been a nice add-on. I've seen this advertised, and I didn't really look into it. It's hardened steel, right? It's hardened to RC50, and so it's just a little thing, just a metal edge to scrape that's, can get into curves and get into depth, and it's very interesting.
So for our listeners that are trying to picture this, think of like a metal tongue depressor with one end squared off.
Yeah. Oh.
Yep. So you have an arch and then a square, 90-degree square. It's kind of like a feeler gauge almost, but
I was just saying it's
much thicker.
It's thinner. It's 0.028 inches thick. I don't know what that is in millimeters. It's thin. And so it's easy, and it's going to be flexible, in your hand, I don't know if you need to try to like hone a burr on it.
It says that about it can be rehoned. So I assume
it's honable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like a card scraper. I mean, it's probably seems a little thinner than my card scrapers, but, for that thing, like if you want to, I don't know when you're going to scrape the inside of a mortise, where you wouldn't like take a chisel to it.
Yeah. But I could see, from a chair maker's perspective, using that end to maybe scrape something off a spindle deck once you've got the spindles assembled or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, get in between things, nooks and crannies. Yeah. Absolutely. I get that. It is really cool. And so next time you're shopping at Lee Valley, at least for under $10, add it to your cart and add it to your order. And there you go. Stocking stuffers for yourself. Get yourself a baker's dozen. Who cares?
I have a Stanley number 45 hand plane,
mm-hmm.
which I've tried to use, but you have it was my grandfather's a roll of blades. And so quarter inch wide, 3/8 wide, 1/2 inch wide, and they make grates. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've used a chisel in a pinch to scrape too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah.
I'd say I've got like a little, I think I have an 1/8 inch chisel, some set I got, it's the bottom side, but it's really small. It's intimidatingly small, but it can get into those nooks if need be.
Yep. Yep. I even got a blue spruce 16th inch
chisel. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Don't lean too hard on that.
Don't lever on that thing.
It was one of those purchases at the end of one of the Woodworking in Americas when David was packing up his booth, and it's like, I got discounts on the stuff that's left.
all right. Yeah, and it's true. But yeah, don't bend.
It's actually come in handy a couple of times too. Yeah. So, well, with that, who do we have to thank this week for our Patreon supporters?
Yeah, we always like to give a big thanks to our Patreon supporters. Today, we're giving a shout out to Michael Jury. Thanks for supporting us there. And if you, dear listener, would like to support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast and support us there. Thank you.
Yeah,
very much appreciate
Michael's,
it.
Yeah, Michael's an accomplished furniture maker, and I forgot he was on. I should have pulled this up before we mentioned him, but he was on not too long ago. I say that it might have been episode 428. So, he's an outstanding furniture maker. So go check him out. Well, so let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Brian, what are you working on?
Not a whole lot. Been traveling for work. I was just recently in all over New Hampshire, almost to Peak Albert's place. I should have stopped by. I was traveling for work. And now it's kids sports season. So that's keeping me a little bit more going, but I'm trying to get everything ready to like be functional. So had a heart to heart with myself, got out some additional scrap. I have a whole stack of exotics that I can't throw out, but the pine, for my failed attempt at making the field hockey goal out of pine, that stuff is hooked and bowed and cupped all over the place now. So I made that, chopped that up, for the fire pit. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of that out of there. We made some shelves, plant stands for my wife for her classroom. She's a public school teacher. We just did some dominoes and made like a big supports for plants upper and lower. Just trying to use up some scrap so we can get moving around. But everything's ready to go. I'm going to get this desk going. I sit down way too much for work. So I need to get my standing desk together.
There you go.
And then on to some fun stuff. I met a local woodworker just a town or two over from me. Guy who has a lot of knowledge on old machinery, like treadle lathes, those types of things. So he's going to come on over, and we're gonna shoot the breeze here about some of the old iron, and hopefully he'll take my old scroll saw that I don't use, and it deserves to be used by somebody. So
right, well, that's cool.
Yeah, I have an old driver line Walker Turner scroll saw. It's beautiful. It's just the head just needs to be adjusted a little bit for it to work beautifully. And I bought like 1,000 pack of blades that I found because they're not easy to find. Put a new motor on it, and it's in great shape. So hopefully he'll be able to use it. I just don't do any scroll work.
Right.
And I hate to see machinery sitting around and nobody using it. It's bad enough like when it's modern stuff, let alone, things from the 1940s.
Yeah. I've got an unused rider mower in my garage that I just need to get rid of. I just, frankly don't need that piece of machinery.
Yeah. Yep. So that's pretty much what I have. How about you, Sean?
Same kind of, not a bunch. Some lawn work, doing a little overseeding in the fall here. A lot of golf. Played on Friday, played in an outing on Saturday with the fam, and that same day went up to a Michigan football game. That was fun to see. They didn't play well, but they won. So, yeah.
Is your coach back on the sidelines?
He is. This next week, as we're recording, he will be on the sideline, and we'll see if he puts a little oomph into the offense. We shall see. Into league play. So, but it was fun. New lights. Yeah. That was the big thing. Was the stadium got new LED color changeable lights, and so it was a whole light show going on. It was kind of wild.
Yep. Well, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've only been following Colorado football, you know.
Who cannot? Like, has anybody missed Neon's team? Like that phenomenon. I heard this week that they got ratings that like dwarfed anything of reasonable any good reason to watch, you know, Big 12 football.
Yeah.
You know, everything after 10 p.m. They were saying like East Coast 2 a.m. there were people like in the millions still tuning in. Like amazing. I went to bed sometime in the fourth quarter.
It was a close game. That helps.
It was. I mean, and all the turmoil, all this stuff, like, you know, he's a hype engine. I mean, and you can't stop that, but credit to him. I mean, they're winning. We'll see if they can beat Oregon this week. That's a bigger test. We shall see.
That'll be the test.
Yeah, and then it's how everyone reacts when it's not. But last week especially, I mean, I think they said 7 different news agencies were in the city for that game. That's enormous.
Yeah.
You know, not just Fox and ESPN, but others were, I mean, everybody piled on because this thing is big, and we'll see. I'm glad he's taking some of the, you know, Harbaugh doesn't need that kind of added, you know, attention. Let it go to Deion.
But man, just think next year is first true recruiting class. He's he's going to be able to get just anybody he wants practically.
I don't know. He hasn't proved recruiting yet. He's proved transfers. Like,
yeah.
I guess he can recruit transfers because he got like 60 of them this past year. But
well,
we'll see.
He's known these kids from.
That's true. Some of them, he was like, oh, yeah, I coached him in juniors, you know, and whatever.
He's been coaching a long time and goes way back with some of them.
And credit him. I mean, he speaks boldly, but so far they're doing what he's saying.
He's backing it up.
Yeah. I mean, and I think even if they lose, I mean, it's still not unfound. I mean, he's still going to.
They were 1-11.
I know. Like, yeah, what do you take from like what is good for a team that only won one game last year? They won the first three, including a good opponent.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you'll see how the season falls out, but like, yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, football talk, Kyle.
Yeah.
What you got working on?
Let's see. I got a new base that I put out on my, website. It's,
I saw that.
Yeah. It's for the stretcher drilling guide. And basically it's a slimmer diameter. It looks very similar to the Mark II version of my stretcher drilling guide, and that's because that's the only way I can make it to fit into a smaller diameter tapered holes. But it will go into like tapered holes for arm support, so that you can drill the mortise for the armrest into the back post. And it's been a hit, so I got a bunch of orders. I posted it yesterday. I got a lot of turning to do in my future, so
that's great.
I gotta get on it. So, but yeah, I've been making these like custom, and I think I mentioned that on our last episode, I'd made like 6 or 7 of these custom. And I went, you know, if people are calling and asking for it, I might as well just put it on the site. So, I can get easier ordering. And sure enough. And, you know, and most everyone that's ordered it is a repeat customer, previous customer. So that's always good. You know, always like when I have repeat customers, because, you know, shows that they're using my stuff and they enjoy the way it works. So,
right. Is that, I mean, in the taper, is it just a shorter section, meaning it's thinner?
Yeah, it's thinner, right. Smaller diameter. So my normal stretcher drilling guide, I think the small end of that is just over 5/8 of an inch, or right at 5/8 of an inch, and this one goes down a lot smaller than that. So if you do drill a 1/2 inch hole and ream it out, it'll fit in there. I think the bottom of this one is like at 9/16 or something like that. 6-degree taper, which is, you know, included angles, was 3-degree taper on the side. It takes it a while. You know, you'd be imagined how far just a 1/16 of an inch difference, how length of it is.
Oh yeah.
As far as with a 3-degree, it's quite a distance. So
anyway. Yeah, I bet.
But yeah, so it's been a good seller, and looking forward to getting on that, getting those orders out. So and you know, with that, you know, the rocker's sitting around not being worked on. So we'll I have plans this weekend. I'm gonna.
Are you to the point of scraping and finish? Or you've got more work?
Almost. Yeah. Let's put it this way: the milk paint has arrived for it.
Oh, there you go. Obviously, you had to wait in production until that happened. So now that it's here, we can keep going. I get it.
So I'll just budget my time better. So it should be fine.
But no rush. I still haven't built a chair. So
that's right. You got to lead on. You got to build the shave horse first.
I know. I have a shave horse kit. Now I don't have the lumber for it. I've been thinking about building a workbench, a true workbench. There's thoughts going on, but it's my secret sauce is that I probably won't ever take a class without having ever tried some of the skills myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so having not shave horsed anything, I'll probably build a shave horse and start drawing, on it, just to get a little familiarity with a tool. Cause if I walked in cold and say like, I have some tools, but I have no idea how to use them, I'd feel like a buffoon. So,
and chair making though, you can pick that up really quick.
I think I will. I really do. Like I did. I mean, I think I told Mark last time we talked, like I just clamped a pine stick, that I had. And I drew lines on it and I tried to draw the blade to the line off a corner. And I did, it's not rocket science. I get it. Mm-hmm. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, with that, Gary, what's going on in your shop?
My shop, my little shop. I finally got one of the 12-foot long 6x6 beams out of there today. It's been in there for weeks. I've got I'm trying to build a shelter, a timber frame shelter over this shipping container that I brought in with lots of wood and tools in it. Anyways, it's been a process. I have two 12 footers that I needed. I came up with a scarf joint with a mortise in the joint, mm-hmm. for a tenon, mm-hmm. on top of the post. And I couldn't figure out how to cut the scarf joint by hand, what I thought I was going to do. I mean, I could with the saw, but so I ended up making a jigged, not a jig, really, just a series of ball bearings. You can buy these 1-inch diameter ball bearings. I bought like 30 of them as a platform to roll my beam into my big bandsaw to cut the scarf.
Wow. So
Egyptian style. I like that.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And it didn't cut straight, but it did cut straight, except the cut kind of tapered. So I know I stayed on the line, which was great. And then I just cleaned it up with a hand blade. So that was a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool.
So I got the scarf joints right. The problem was I bought all this stock probably 2 years ago, and it was at the height of the lumber price. So I made a huge mistake. I said, I'll buy the stuff with the pith included. I'll work through the problems.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Oh, mercy. I have in this one piece, it's so split and twisted. I've probably got about a dozen butterfly keys in it. And then I had to correct the twist because they're sitting on top of these posts. Anyway, it's been an experience. We'll see.
It has character now.
There you go.
It has lots of character. and what's really funny about it is, and I told this to someone, I have a 2,000th inch thick feeler gauge hanging on one of my tool cans. And that's what I check my joints with. And this stuff, I said, an eighth of an inch. If it's within an eighth of an inch, it's all right. Heck, that's good. Perfect.
Pick your battles.
Yep.
It's so different. It's just so different. But it'll be great. So that, and I'm getting ready for my online mastery students. The first year students are coming out. We've never met. And they're coming out to visit this weekend. So that'll be great.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We did it last year, two different groups, but this year it's mostly first year students. I got a couple of graduates coming in, so mm-hmm. that's always fun. It's fun to meet these people that you've been seeing on Zoom all this time, and you go, "Wow, you're a lot taller than me. You're a lot." You don't say you're a lot shorter than. I remember when Adam came in, and it was like, "Dang, you're a big boy." Yeah, so that's been fun, and it's fun to meet everyone. And we do, so second year we do bending, steam bending, coopering. So we'll do a little exercise on Saturday.
Oh, that
that'll be
like,
fun.
Sounds like fun. Now you have a new mastery program kicking off here in the.
Well, it's not a mastery program. It's a Go ahead.
I started to say, I know you got this setting up shop series, and we were going to talk about that. But I think, don't you have a new edition of the mastery program starting off with a new group of students?
Yeah. We're still taking on students. It's going to start again in October. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Looking forward to that. It's been great. As I mentioned earlier, it's a 2-year program, and after the 2 years, I don't know if there are so many of them, but I had 10 students who wanted to continue for a third year, and that was really fun. Every week, about an hour before class, I go, "What am I going to talk about?" And then we'd pick up a design topic, and we'd be rocking and rolling for 3 hours and just blow through the time. It was so much fun.
Awesome.
We focused on Chinese furniture as a point of reference and study, and using the Gustav Ecke book, which is this fabulous book on Chinese furniture. And people built a chair in the first semester. And the second semester, they built whatever they wanted or built a model of some piece to review. So anyway, it was a lot of fun.
That is cool. Well, so tell us a little bit about this new series you got coming up, the Setting Up Shop series.
Well, I closed down my studio March 15th, 2020, when COVID hit. Closed the doors. And a student of mine, Rogelio, said, "I'm in the business of offering classes and doing events online, and I can help you do classes online." So I was like, wow. So he was a godsend. And I started doing online classes, and then decided to try the mastery program online. I moved down to Portland, sold my home. I had had a space out here in the gorge, the Columbia River Gorge, for a couple of years with a small 600 square foot shop. Now, my previous shop was 10,000 square feet.
Ooh, that's quite a downsize.
I'm not very good at math, but even I can figure out.
Holy crap.
Oh, there's so much crap, Ryan. You can't imagine how much crap there was. It was just, and I started months in advance moving stuff. And I just realized there's tens of thousands of objects, screws and pieces of wood and jigs.
Yeah.
So I jettisoned a lot of stuff. I sold some machines. I sold both my saw stops. I sold my big joiner. That was, anyway, I sold a bunch of half my benches. The other half are sitting in my shipping container with a lot of wood. And I've got a house here, and I've decorated it as anyone would. I've in the guest bedroom, there's a joiner, 8-inch joiner.
Sure.
And yes.
Why not?
A compressor.
Are you married, Gary? No.
Recently separated. And then in the master bedroom is a drill press, a bench, more wood, a dust cleaner. You know, it's terrible. So I'm getting a shop. I got the foundation finally poured, and going to try and get a shop built this fall. And when I was out here trying to set up this little 600 square foot shop, I went, you know, this is my fifth shop that I'm setting up. And I've got some pretty interesting thoughts on the topic of setting up shop. And I thought about it, and I recorded something back, I think 2018, 2019, and then didn't get around to it because I was so busy moving, but came around to the idea again and started out as a 20 lecture series. And I've cut it back down to a more reasonable number of 12 lectures, about, I don't know, November to April, 6 months, 5-6 months. And break it up into chapters. One is shop flow, how stuff moves through your shop, how you move through your shop, hand and power tool equipment, concepts, what's drape mean? What does flat mean? Can you fix these things? Those are big, big concepts that beginners and people just starting out need to come to terms with. So I wanted to talk about that. And then strategies for building. So the way I like to build things, which is with separate stations. So I work off sawhorses. I never build on my bench. Mm-hmm. I do it with small stuff. But big stuff, it's always on a platform. And I have short sawhorses, and I have tall sawhorses. And I can throw down a sheet of plywood. I can level it anywhere on the floor. So we'll build sawhorses, make winding sticks. We're not going to build furniture. We're just going to build stuff for the shop, which I find to be the most satisfying thing that I do. Oh, I built myself a set of drawers. This is great. I get to fill them up.
So yes. That's kind of, well, that, so that's what we're going to. Yeah, that's fantastic, especially doing some of that stuff. Because, yeah, that when I was starting out, it was like, yeah, is this flat enough? Especially square. Hey, is this square enough? And then it goes, it depends. Depends on what you're making.
It really does depend. Yeah. And I realize now, once you learn how to sharpen, that's the big if. once you learn how to sharpen, you can fix almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's good to be square, but if you're out, there are ways of fixing. All is not wrong.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I have a nice little wall hanging cabinet that looks absolutely beautiful. And you would never know that the doors are a little bit wider at the top than they are at the bottom.
There you go. There you go.
Custom.
I've been doing these lectures for some guilds around the country called Fixing Mistakes. So if anyone out there has a guild that would like to hear my Fixing Mistakes lecture, they're free. I come to your shop via Zoom. And one of the important lessons in the Fixing Mistakes lecture is never point out your mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say, oh, look at that door. It's taller at the top. You just don't say anything.
Yep. Which is the hardest thing from a craftsman, it's in my experience, you know, is to, you know, all the mistakes you made, but when somebody walks up and goes, oh my God, that's great. And you don't say, yeah, but look here, look here, look here, look here. You know, you just feel like, oh yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thank you. You know, just to admit or just internalize a little bit, just like what your personal problems are when everyone else thinks it's fine.
Yeah. And that's a craft person thing across,
I think, everything.
Multiple media. Cause my wife does that with her costumes. Like, oh, like this hem is this or that. And it's just, we're so picky and, but yet so proud of our work and we want it to be the best possible. And
right.
It's ironic that the first thing out of our mouth is the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody does.
And I do the critical side of it. You know, we've gone to a couple weddings in old barns and, you know, you look up and you go, the hell were they thinking when they did that? Who repaired that? You know, like what's that? And it's from my knowledge base of understanding how things are done and maybe should be done or whatever. You know, you see things, but like, don't point out your own mistakes, you know, I guess is the thing.
I was in Paris, France before Notre Dame burned.
Okay.
And I was inside the main nave section of the church, looking up at the second floor going, dang, that column's crooked. And so is that one over there. I mean, it's been around for 500 years, 600 years.
It's fine, right?
Oh, so it's done its job. But yeah, I mean, you see this stuff, you know, you look at someone else's work and you go, oh, they boogered that. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, that's still look, the piece still looks good. You know, there's blowout maybe, you know, where you drill through your armrest and there's some blowout. Okay. Well, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
It's just when it happens to you, that mistake takes over the entire room.
Mm-hmm.
My main floor was 5,000 square feet. It took over all 5,000 square feet of it when I made a mistake. So the lesson for me was to walk out of the shop. And if it was a bad problem, I would walk to the end of the block and back. If it was a really bad problem, I would have to walk all the way around the block. By the time I got back, I knew there was a solution, or I was replacing the part, and I knew exactly what to do.
Yep.
And it always takes longer to argue with yourself than it does to fix it. Just fix it. It's fine. Forgive yourself. Move on.
Yep.
Forgiveness is the big. It's probably the most important tool in your toolkit. Forgiveness.
For all the jigs and tools that are out there to make accurate dovetails, but if you look at something from 200-300 years ago and you find out that they didn't have any of these tools and it's still together, it still works, and it might have a gap or it might not be the right angle or whatever. I mean, that's just reality.
In the 18th century, they were cutting their dovetails past the gauge line on the inside. They didn't care.
It wasn't the outside, right?
All they were concerned about was the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I repaired a piece that was from the 18th century. I was like, dang, but okay,
but hey,
that's all right. It still works. That joint still works. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain preciousness that we all, you know, have and get involved with as you get so close to your work and as our ability to get tighter and tighter with our tolerances. But, you know, there's a certain point you realize that your chair that went together and it's all kind of wonky and that helps the stability of it over the years. You know, it's not perfect. It's there and it's, you know, the skeletal structure will hold. So.
Yeah, so true. Well, so I do have a couple of questions about the class. Reasonably priced, you can get the full 12 lectures for $495. So is there going to be an option to, if you just wanted one or two lectures, to pick those up at a different rate?
I was going to do that with the 20 lecture version. I'm going to just ask people to buy in.
Okay.
It's going to be worth the trip.
It really
will.
I think so. You know, all the knowledge you gain. What was it? When we first announced this a couple episodes ago, Brian, what'd you say? You go, hey, this $495 is going to save you so much money.
Yeah. Yeah. I was saying, like, everybody's done this. You bought what you told yourself you were going to use, and you maybe got it out of the box and it's just sitting there unused. And we've all done that multiple times. So your course would help you bypass the majority of that, and you're going to save well more than $495. Oh, yeah. So it's a great investment.
Absolutely.
I have a student who has not every jig ever made, but darn close. and he's stuck on this project I'm helping him with. And, you know, a lot of times we get too involved with, if I only had this gouge, then I'd be able to move forward on this project because I want to texture that edge. So it gives us an excuse. Mm-hmm. And I'm as guilty as anyone. At this timber frame, started in April, and I'm still screwing around it. So I'm as guilty as anyone. But every once in a while, I need sort of a kickstart. And when I came out to this new shop, I couldn't mill a piece of wood, and I was lost. And I understood finally how important that was to me as a woodworker. I need to be able to make this, whatever it is. I mean, I'm talking about resawing veneer 9 inches wide out of this course. I just need to make something that's 3/4 inch thick and 2 1/4 inches wide and this long. And I can't do it. Nothing is set up for this unless I want to cut it all out by hand. So what's important? What kind of stuff are you going to be doing in your shop? You know, for a turner, it's completely different. For a chair maker, it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's for a chair maker, it's different. But everybody needs a bandsaw. Everybody needs a bandsaw.
That would be the last tool out of my shop.
I wish I had one, for sure.
Oh, yep. Once you get one, you won't.
I've used them. I appreciate them. I just don't personally have one.
No, you should get one just because you can. I got spoiled. I bought this old Yates American. I found it for $325. Back in 1970 something. And it was a lot of dough for a poor woodworker. And it has this great rack and pinion fence on. And that allowed me to rip. It allowed me to cut joints. It changed my life. It absolutely changed my woodworking life. And that, and you can cut curves and you can do shapes. The list goes on, cut circles. Yeah, it's such an important tool. For chair makers, for turners, and they use it for different purposes, of course, but they're still so valuable.
Yep. If I looked at all the machines in my shop that get turned on and off, bandsaw is probably at least number one or number two on any given week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I only have two now, and the big one is back in storage. But one of these days, we'll get that out. And that's a 36-inch, and that's just for reason, and that's fantastic. And that tool taught me what blade drift.
You ready?
Yep.
For a completely different theory on blade drift, because there's, everyone's got a theory.
Right.
It's, the sharpness of your blade. It's how it's tracking on the tires. Are the wheels coplanar? Well, they can't be if you make any adjustments. They can't be.
Right.
But they can be out of an east and west orientation. So north and south is how you adjust, but you adjust your top wheel north and south to track properly, and your bottom wheel stays where it is. Well, I put on this giant blade, this 3/4 inch carbide tip blade for resawing, and it was banging into my aluminum guard on this one side, so I could adjust the top wheel east and west. And when I did, all of a sudden I couldn't cut without adjusting for drift. I could not cut because the blade, as it came off, that top wheel was enough out of planar with the bottom wheel that it was adjusting as it came through. And it was a mess. I had to have an offense I can adjust, but I had to adjust for blade drift. And I never had to adjust for blade drift on my other machine. I just slow down, feed rate, sharp blade, everything's fine.
Right.
But adjusting that top wheel out, as I did, caused blade east and west. Now, Most bandsaws, you can't adjust the top wheel like I can on this 36 inch Ace America. Although if you're in the market for a machine, buy one of those. But you can adjust the bottom. And if you look at it, you can see that there's bolts that adjust that bottom wheel. So if you're having a lot of problems with blade drift, that's your culprit.
How that
top wheel and the bottom wheel.
Yeah, how they orient each other. Yeah.
East and west, north and south. Yeah, that it's going to stay on the bottom perfectly vertical, we hope. But the top one you're adjusting. But you can adjust that bottom wheel east and west, change the drift situation.
It's really terrible. Yeah,
that is. Yeah, my biggest issue with the bandsaw is changing the blade. I will run a blade till it won't cook that butter. You know,
it's like pop. Like,
doesn't everyone?
yeah. It's like I got to get better.
Put it another week.
I always cringe when I see people either unfolding or folding.
Yeah, you just
to unfold, you just go like, oh, wow, and just run away. It's like, look it.
No. First time I went to a saw shop, and he said, oh, here's your bandsaw blade. And he folded it up. I said, do it again.
Yeah, dude, how did you do that? You know, I mean, you're talking about a 3/4 inch, deep, carbide bladed, carbide toothed blade. That thing's got some oomph to it. Mm-hmm. That's a mean spring unrolling. When you open it up, so
that's,
wear gloves and
wear gloves.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Wear gloves.
Yeah. You respect the hell out of that blade. Some like 14 TPI thin little thing. I just like ding-a-ling-a-ling.
That's gonna be the one that's gonna get you though.
It'll bite you for sure. But you could like hold it off to one side. Something that's thicker than that, like a good resaw blade. Boy, those intimidate me.
There's a reason they should.
As I
tell my students, your butcher uses one of these. Right? Every day, your butcher uses one.
Yes, consider that side of beef or your leg.
Yeah.
really good at cutting meat, so be careful.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But you can learn. You, as with all things,
of course,
caution is important. There are some machines too, some bandsaws that are just a pain in the ass to put the blade on.
Mm-hmm.
And some are, really simple. Pop this off, put it back on, and there you go.
Yeah,
but I had a jet that was just, it was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sold it, I said, this isn't a great machine. I want to tell you this. And the guy said, no, it'll do exactly what I need it to do. Go, take this away.
Yep. Don't ask any more questions. Keep on your way. How long, just out of curiosity, your 36-inch bandsaw, how long is that blade?
Oh, 243, 42 inches. Wow.
That's a big one.
It's a huge blade. And it's like a dollar a tooth. So
consider that.
Yeah. But I tell you, we would cut with this, and we'd cut all sorts of stuff with it. I bought a bunch of redwood water tank I got turned on to. So I bought all this redwood, and I was resawing that. And it's not pine, but it's still, gums up a little bit. It's resinous a little. Mm-hmm. This old growth. And what I really found was important was cleaning my blade. And I'll even clean them in place. And it's nicer to take them all off and spray them with some orange gunk remover, which I love. I used to use Easy Off oven cleaner, not just for the scent, but for it's terrible smell.
Oh God.
But it works. It works great. But this, I forget what it's, I think it's, is it, I'm not sure if it's a Goop brand or whatever, but that orange citrus cleaner works really great on bandsaw blades. And I just do it in place and take my toothbrush and clean it up, move it along, clean
wash it down. Yeah.
That will help. That will help because blades get gummed up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I've cleaned my bandsaw blade a couple of times, but I took it off and folded it and put it in. I was able, it's a 14 inch bandsaw, so I was able to fit it in one of those containers for a 10 inch.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that works.
If you're doing it in place, when you're done, do you just run some like cardboard through it to just let the teeth clean off? Like,
No, I just hit it with some sawdust.
Oh, all right.
It's not that acidic.
It wasn't more about that. It was just like any residue, anything that was left. You wouldn't want to put a fine piece of, it could stain or anything, as you're putting a workpiece.
No. And I'm wiping it off with the rag as I'm raise the blade guard out of the way, depending on your bandsaw you got.
Right. And just like
8 inches or 12 inches. And then with the direction of the cut, you can clean it off pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's not If the blade is off, then I clean it in the sink or something, take my toothbrush to it, clean the gullets, and then go over to the table saw, which hasn't really collected all the sawdust like I was supposed to do. Just throw it in there and wipe that off.
There you go.
That makes sense. Well, that's a valuable tip. Speaking of that,
there's going to be a lot of them in this setting up shop.
I imagine so. I imagine so. Yeah, I'm excited about this for you. I think this is going to be a good program for you and for everybody, actually. But one of the things I did want to ask you is, you know, you've been a woodworker educator for a number of years. And so what do you think are the one or two things that every woodworker should know or be proficient
at? Is it time to talk beer?
Almost. Let's do it. Yes. Oh, so every woodworker
beer drinking might be fun.
Not before.
I'm going to serious up here. My worst accident, I've had three bad accidents, and my worst was on one beer. One beer, and you know, it was a Sunday afternoon. The three of us were changing the knives on a 16-inch planer, and could go wrong? The blades we put the blades in. Each of us put a blade in, you know, to get the experience. It was a long time ago. And I was tightening the nuts on the bolts to hold the chip breaker or what on this old Rockwell machine. And open end wrench instead of the closed end wrench. And I slipped and went right into the knife.
Ooh, yeah.
One beer.
One beer.
So the first rule is you're welcome to drink. Go away from the shop. You have a drink. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's my experience. I just won't do it. I remember teaching at Aramont, which is a great place. If you've never been to Aramont, okay, for those Tennesseans out there, admit it. It's a weird part of this. I mean, you're right down the street from Dollywood, which, you know, she's a blessing, but Gatlinburg's a weird place. Anyway, there's Aramont.
It is. And good hiking. In the park.
Oh, great. Great. I
agree.
Yeah, it's a strange place. Anyway, I had gone, students were working and they were working late. I had dinner and had a couple of beers and I came back and I said, oh, you need to use the biscuit joiner. And I showed someone the biscuit joiner and it went scooting along the surface because I hadn't pushed in far enough because I had a beer. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Stay away. It's just stay away. Beer is good. Your fingers are better. So,
yep. Anyway. I agree to that.
Back to your question.
Yeah.
Patience. Oh, that's what you need. Patience. Patience with yourself. That took me decades. And some people have it. I don't.
Yeah.
I was impatient. I wanted to, you know, get stuff done in a hurry. And I wanted to be good in a hurry. And that's, you need patience. And truthfully, forgiveness. Now, you probably want tools, and I'll give you tools.
No.
Patience and forgiveness are really the big one. Mm-hmm. I was giving a talk, and I was staring at this one master's student. He was a resident, and he had come from the Air Force, in 20-year career in the Air Force. He was a bombardier. So tolerances, it was an interesting concept. And he turned out making some beautiful work, but he was super hard on me. And I remember staring at him, and it just came to, I was talking to myself, but I was talking with Patrick at the time. And I said, you know, the most important thing we need is forgiveness, you know, for the mistakes we made. And, you know, my book says it starts out and says, I'm one of the loudest woodworkers there is. And that's because I'm always screaming at myself, my latest mistake. Lighten up. So I think those things are really, and as for other things, I don't know. It's been a long journey. I got lucky. I got lucky to be a woodworker. I made that choice a long time ago. I got lucky. But it's not easy. The biggest issue is dealing with yourself. It's not the tools. It's not the wood. It's what you've done with them that particular day. And some days you're really good at it. Well, you want to bottle those days. Mm-hmm. And other days, like I tell my students, on other days, you have stupid days. And if you don't have habits developed for your stupid days, then you get into trouble. But if you do have habits, then blunt force trauma is the worst thing that'll happen, which can be severe, but it beats, you know, cutting off your finger. I just put my finger into the bandsaw last year. Why? Because I was doing three things at once. Stupid. They're always stupid. The first thing anyone says when they make a mistake and have an accident is, that was stupid. You're right.
You're always right.
You can fix these things, but you have to be aware and not afraid, but aware.
I like that patience and forgiveness. I'm still learning those things myself, so you know.
It's a constant battle. No one's there. I was thinking about this guy I met years ago, and he was a physician by trade. He was and he worked with the Olympic athletes and stuff, but Herman. And this was back in my 30s when I played a lot of volleyball. Herman had this thing called volleyball church. On Sunday morning, he rented this church, him and his wife, and they would set up a net. This is one of those old style gyms where, you know, the basketball out of bound markers is about 6 inches from the wall.
Right. Yeah.
So there were hoops up, but if you took a layup and didn't adjust for the wall, you're going to run right. So it was a really tight gym, and he would sit us down. There would be, you know, maybe on a bad day, 10 people. On a good day, there'd be 20 people, and he'd sit everyone down and give us a little sermon before volleyball. And I'm saying, man, I want to play. I'd already been shooting hoops at the park, and I was ready to go. And we had to sit and listen to Herman's sermon. And now I recognize the value of it, because he was always talking about visualization. Visualize how you want this lay to work. And athletes talk about that all the time. The same thing, I think, can be true for woodworkers. What do I want to have happen here? I want kickback to happen? No, I don't. Therefore, I need to check the edge of this piece here, and I need to make sure my fence is set up properly. I need to do this. You know, do I want to make this cut with this chisel with my hand in front of the chisel? No, I don't think I do. I think I want to put it behind, which means I need to secure the piece without using myself as a vise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So simple, but you know, and so that visualization, that's, he would talk about it every single week, and forgetting the last play and going on to the next one, mm-hmm. visualizing what's going to happen. And he was a good volleyball player. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Anyway,
I think that's important. I saw that struggle when my son, who's on the golf team, went to a course just last week that he'd never played in before. And it's a daunting, not terribly course, but there are some shots that just don't look comfortable to the eye. And he was missing, uncharacteristically missing shots. Right. And I told him after the fact, he did his thing. But after that, I'm like, mentally, where were you? Right. What were you thinking? Because that can drive all physical activity. It's so important.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, the good golfers are tough mentally. That's what Tiger was made of.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, he was tough mentally. His body is broken down, but his body was broken down, he'd still be killing people.
Yep.
That's the real thing that top athletes do. And what happens as an athlete, and as they get older, and they're not 20, and they don't bend the way they used to bend, they don't bounce the way they used to bounce off the floor, is they understand the game better.
Yep.
You know, Gretzky could see the play, you know, two or three stick moves before anyone else could, because he was so smart. He was thinking ahead. And that's the thing that, boy, there's so many times in the shop you do something and you go, what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
Well, basically you were.
Yeah. I mean, if you didn't foresee that happening, you know,
right.
You could have. And if you didn't.
Yeah. And now you got to fix your mistake.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's why I developed the 5-minute dovetail. I did this back in the 80s. I was teaching at this place, and I said, I got to teach people how to cut dovetail. So we'll do it out of these little pieces of scrap. And then I showed people, and most people were really unimpressed because they didn't really want to cut dovetail. But the idea of forcing them to sit down and make these practice cuts got them away from what was outside the door, away from their car ride in or bus ride in or bike ride in, away from their day. And they were starting to focus now on something really small. Mm-hmm. And that kind of practice, I wish I did every day. I try to. Mm-hmm. I try to. I try to do something, you know, mundane and stupid just to warm up before I get to the important stuff. But that 5-minute dovetail exercise is about centering and getting focused. Mm-hmm. And that's the real key, particularly if you're doing something you've done before, because you can screw that up too.
When I started, you know, getting kind of serious about this, and I was, you know, learning about dovetails, I still have samples. I cut corners, you know, and just made And it was day one, day two, day three, day 12, day, you know, and on and on and on. And I saw the improvement from repetitive action. And it was because you were focusing. Like the first one, for sure, I wasn't paying attention to anything. Angles, accuracy, nothing. Like it was just kind of getting it done. And then you realize like, oh no, you need to look at it this way. You need to kind of finesse it this way. You need to pay attention when you're doing this operation. All of that matters.
There are so many adjustments you make with your body. You may not be aware of. But as you get practice, you realize, oh yeah, I got to stretch my legs apart a little bit farther.
Yep.
Oh, I got to get behind my shoulder here.
Yeah, look at it this way, or twist this way, or yeah.
And those little things really add up. And with repetition, it's like when we would do these 5-minute dovetails, I would say to my students, "Why is it woodworkers don't warm? Baseball players warm up." I went to a Mariners game; they were playing the Yankees, and Alex Rodriguez was throwing liners from the left field wall to home plate on a laser. Wow. Just practicing, just throwing. Baseball players warm up, musicians warm up, not woodworkers. Where's that $100 piece of, you know, ebony or whatever you're cutting into? And boom, you made a mistake. I cut on the wrong side of the line. So that really makes a difference.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's great advice. And I should do that myself too. Warm up.
Yeah, it just doesn't take long. Just warm up a little something. Hand plane, sharpen. I mean, you can screw up sharpening, but that's one thing I like to do, because there's always something that needs it. Flatten the back of another tool.
Exactly. Well, so are you working on anything in your shop, you know, for yourself personally or professionally besides the shed out back?
No, I'm really not. I've got a, well, and that's, it's not true. How many projects are unfinished? I did a bending project last winter that I really got to finish up. It was a simple bend. Brian Boggs had come to my shop and showed me this really great simple jig for bending. And so I used that, or a variation of it, and bent these white oak strips with kind of a tulip shape on the end. And they were tapered. And I've got 12 of them, and I'm going to put them around in a circle and create something great. Yes, I'm working on that. I don't know what the hell it is, but it's a lot of fun. It's in the shop. I don't know. It's going to be a wastebasket holder. It's, I don't know. But it'll look cool when it's done. I've got an interesting idea for this. There's always stuff. I mean, I've got lots of projects that are unfinished. Actually, I got an oak chest. When my mom died, I got that back from her. And I realized, oh, this piece has been built for 20 years. And I looked at it and I went, oh, it's not done. I need to add a piece of brass here. I need to add a little. It's got these brass rings on the sides of the chest to pick it up. It's not huge, maybe 2 feet across. So it's got those brass rings there, but it needed a brass ring for the lid. Well, now the brass ring is hitting the wood as you drop it. I went, now I need a little plate for the front. So there's these little things that I go, it's not done. It's interesting. It's fun to look at a design. You say, oh, that's complete. And then realize, no, if I tweak this, that will make this piece better. And that's really fun. That's what the mastery program is about. It's looking at design and saying, oh, I did a really good job. It's not quite right.
Yep.
So the next one I do, I'm going to, you know, remember that about making doors or, you know, cutting dovetails, whatever it is. Because design is a vocabulary like anything. And so you learn from your mistakes. Boy, got a lot of those under my belt.
Part of the process.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's part of it. I'm with stuff I've built, I'm always like that too. It's like when I finish this piece, I go, yeah, that's pretty good. But if I tweak this over here, if I change this, I made the spacing between these spindles a little bit wider or narrower, depending on what the case may be. It's unique, but you know, it's one of those things. I try not to get down on that particular piece, but I know next time I do something, hey, I'm going to incorporate a little change here, a little thing there. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a mistake, like
no,
cutting on the wrong side of the line. It just feels, it doesn't feel like a failure. It just feels like really valuable information to me. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I can learn from this. And I think that building a lot of stuff, I think, really helps. The more that you build, the more information you gather about what works for you, what works for your design vocabulary, and what you like to do, what you don't like to do. Because there are some things you look at, well, I should have done this. And you go, yeah, but I'm never going to do it because I hate doing it.
Yeah. But I mean, especially case pieces. One of the things I always thought is where the placement of handles for drawers or doors. It's like,
oh, yeah, huge. Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. And
huge.
You're and there's control. So many different ways to do it. Exactly. So many schools of thought.
Yeah. Centered and centered and two thirds.
Do they come up in a taper? Are they all straight? I mean, are you an 18th century maker or are you a 20th century maker? I mean, there's really different styles. You know, the bale pulls on 18th century stuff is just right in a row, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. To my eye, that works because symmetry, like that's what my eye wants. Uh-huh. If it's off at an angle, like I'm going to think about it.
So there's this interesting concept called wabi-sabi, the student reminded me of recently, which is the Japanese technique of designing something that isn't quite right. So
interesting. You
know, yeah. So the placement of the handle is just a hair off. Now I can't do that to a handle. I had a box and I turned to my apprentice at the time. I said, okay, so this is where I want the handle to go. Make sure it's centered and it's off. And every time I look at it, I say, it's off. So you got to pick your spots. But evidently the rising sun flag is like 1/100th of an inch or I don't know, of the old size. It's like off center. It's just a
really?
Yeah.
I read interesting.
That yeah.
So I was in a museum, an art museum in, I think it was Bloomington, Indiana, where the designer, there's no right angles in the building. Step, every wall, none of it is 90 degrees.
How does it
and
feel?
It's subtle. You don't feel it. You don't notice it. But knowing that it is, you start looking for it. And then you notice it. It's just off by a little bit. And you know, it's like that thing, like you look at it and you go, it's close. You know, or your eye might see it, but if it's subtle enough, you won't notice it, you know, at all. It's a very interesting thing, a very artistic kind of take on it.
Who is the architect?
Oh boy.
If you think of it, send me the name.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, that's fine. Just send me the name. That'd be great.
Yep.
Yeah, that sort of stuff is really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool. Yeah. Send me too. I'll add it to the show notes.
So I was riding my bike last weekend and I'm riding around this neighborhood. I was back in Portland. And I was riding around this neighborhood, and I used to live in this neighborhood, not exactly, but, and all of a sudden I ride by this street corner, and there's a mural stuck right on the street corner, and it's tile, and it's about 2 foot square, and it is, you know, do you know the compass rose, that pattern? So basically it's done with circles and arcs, and there may be a center circle, and there's an arc, and then, you know, four, and then there's four more, so there's eight. This one had maybe 16, and then triangles radiating around that in three concentric circles, and it was just so incredibly intense. It was, I just stared at it. I just got off my bike and stared at it like I was, wow, I was mesmerized. It was just great. I got to get a picture of it. I'll send you. It was amazing. It's like Islamic art. Mm-hmm. There's no nature in it. There's no humans in it. It's all geometry.
Yeah, and that's true.
It wasn't Islamic, but it was. It was a geometry that, at another level, boy. It was something.
Cool. So how long had this compass rose been there? Is it something?
It was starting to degrade. So I would guess 20 years or 30 years.
Wow.
I don't know.
Cool.
Yeah, there's some of the slate has been busted. I didn't see anyone home at the house, so I would have asked. But and it's certainly the city certainly didn't do this. it was amazing. It was really amazing. And that sort of stuff. You know, you're walking around a city and you look at those things, and that's what design is about, is opening your eyes to those possibilities. They're there everywhere.
Yep. Yep. I'm fortunate enough to live near Galveston, which that's one of the interesting things my wife and I like to go is go down these streets and look at the houses, because they're all Victorian era houses that, you know, are still lived in, still in place, you know, still maintained. Mm-hmm. Most of them, there are a few that are dilapidated, but not many. There's some beautiful architectural details from, you know, mid 18th century to early 1900s. So
that's great fun.
Yeah,
if you're in Chicago, Sean, do you get to Chicago ever?
I ran a marathon there. I visited there a few times, so yes.
Okay. Well, there's this museum. I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
Never heard of this place. And was there a few years ago, called the Driehaus Museum. Driehaus is the guy who owns it. I forget who the original owner was, but it was okay. In the Beaux-Arts period. So like 1890, 1910, Gilded Age, you know, he was some magnate, railroad, coal, who knows. But he has this house and every floor has a different inlaid pattern. I took more pictures of floors than I've ever done in my life. It was just crazy. It was just crazy. And there was, you know, some furniture and tapestry and stuff. And all that was great. But the floors were mind-blowing. Really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That is cool. Well, speaking of mind-blowing things, is there anything in your career that you haven't built that you still want to build? Sort of your white whale?
Oh, cool. Sure. That's a yes. Wow. Interesting question. Well, there's some... I bought a whole bunch of walnut from a guy down the valley, which is almost 10 years ago now. Big chunks, like 12-inch by 12-inch chunks of walnut, 4 feet tall. So there's some sculpture I want to do with those.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of pieces. I mean, I want to redo this one table of mine called Ruby's Knees, which has this elephant-like snout, but it's supposed to be a variation on a cabrio. It's all convex. There's no concave to it except the inside. Anyway, it's a 12-quarter chunk of walnut or mahogany that I have. I've done a couple of them, and I want to redo that. I really want to redo some.
That sounds cool. Good.
Yeah. That is cool. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we let you go, I just want to mention that for everyone that you do a podcast, the Splinters Podcast. And how's that been going? I noticed I think the last episode you had an interview with one of your mastery program students.
Yeah, Matt Lynch.
Who we had on not too long ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt's a good guy, and it was a little surprising. Go check out the podcast on northwestwoodworking.com or Apple or any of the podcast providers, Splinters, because Matt reveals that he wanted to choke me during class. for something I said about one of his pieces, and you know, it's always interesting. It's not unusual because people take their work really seriously. And I understand that. I remember I had another mastery student years ago and he said, I wanted to fight you after that critique. It's not about attacking anyone. It's about trying to be productive with your critiques. Anyway, Matt.
Constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism, the only way to go. Yep. So Matt and I had a big, long conversation. I'm going to bust it up, I think, into three different podcasts. Yeah, check that out, because that was fun. He talks about becoming a designer, and he wasn't
there
before.
There you go.
And, so that's fun.
Yeah, I checked it. It's a 33-ish hour drive for me to you. If I ever want to be berated for my decisions, I'll make that drive.
Harangue. No berating. I just harangue. See this little difference. I want you to be better. I want you,
absolutely.
I know you have it in you. Right. I'm the Jim Harbaugh kind of guy. I come from that school. I'm the Jim Harbaugh kind of guy. Pushing you.
Tell it like it is. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I totally get it. I grew up in a Polish family. I get it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
get it.
Yes, sir. Oh. That's fantastic. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I think I'll start us off. And I am just going to recommend everyone get out there and drink some of the seasonal Oktoberfest. I've had a bunch of them over the last few weeks, and they're going to be coming to end soon. So check them out while you can, because I haven't had a bad one yet.
No, I've had some on draft. I've had some in bottles. Yep. Absolutely.
It's our favorite beer season of the year for me.
Exactly. So, Brian,
it's that time of year when it's getting colder outside. Oh, you want something a little warmer. Uh-huh. I don't know about if that applies to Texas.
It was only 96 here today.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah. It was 50-something this morning at my house.
But it was dry. Same. It was dry.
It was dry was heat. Nice. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was standing next to the sun.
Yeah. Oh, so
burger.
Exactly.
Burger. That's my recommendation for a beer.
Oh, which
what was it, Gary? I'm sorry.
A Bitburger.
Bitburger.
Who makes that?
Yeah, it's a German beer.
Okay.
The Bitburger company. I used to get it at a Thai restaurant in Portland.
Of course.
Oh, sounds like a lager.
Yeah,
it's a lager.
Cool.
Very tasty.
So, Brian, what about yourself?
I'm drinking a Hopsalot, which is an IPA from Lawson's. I guess, well, technically, it's Lawson's Finest Liquids up in Vermont. They make Sip of Sunshine and those kinds of things. Just about everything Lawson makes is great. Definitely hoppy, as the name says, but it's good. I like it a lot. I've never
Multiple hops, multiple varieties of hops?
That's a great question. These guys got a chance to see me on camera trying to not spill it all over my keypad here either. So I can't quite see. It's too dark, right? It's too dark for him. But
dark text, all that. I always find, because I've had Galaxy and Citra and other hops, and they definitely have different profiles.
Oh yes.
It's interesting. Something like that is a hops lot. I wonder if they just threw a shit ton of one type or a variety.
Like a blend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, my house IPA here is Hopadillo.
So Hopadillo?
Oh yeah.
It's very hoppy.
Yep.
Yeah.
My wife like likes it. Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it?
It is. It is. It's a local brewery. Well, I think they're getting out there because InBev bought them a few years ago. So
okay, it'll be widespread then.
Yeah, but luckily their beer hasn't changed. At least I haven't noticed it. So anyway, but Sean, what do you have to recommend?
So I bought this a couple weeks ago and I had it in the basement. I finally got it in the fridge to chill out a little bit today because just like the Oktoberfest beers, the pumpkin beers are coming out and it's about pumpkin season. It's getting cool. Brian, same thing. 50s in the morning. It might get to 80. You know, we're in that transition time right now, but a nice warm, you know, spiced something or other. Never can go wrong with Dogfish pumpkin.
Yeah.
That's there you go. Can't go wrong with it. And so, yeah, I'm the this year's version of it, whatever. A nice, good pumpkin spiced beer. Not the Starbucks pumpkin spice, not that thing. It's a pumpkin beer done well.
It's not overbearing.
It isn't. It's warm. Yeah. You get a little bit of that taste of some, you know, yam / pumpkin in it. And Dogfish is a company I know from seeing video footage of it. They literally put fruit in their mash. It's not purees. It's not other stuff. They use the real deal, as far as I understand, in it. So you get the kind of, you get those flavors of what pumpkin pie kind of tastes like.
So not from concentrate, there. Right?
And yes, not a scientifically concentrate.
Yeah, at least the beers that were made during the production of that video.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, once it goes into wider distribution, who knows? They found the best taste scientists around to make it work. But no, I think it's pretty good.
Cool. Well, so Gary, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Oh, well, our website is northwestwoodworking.com. I don't do Twitter anymore. I just don't. Instagram at Northwest Woodworking, Facebook at Northwest Woodworking, YouTube, Northwest Woodworking Studio. Got some new videos coming out there. So
okay.
Yeah.
And your Splinters podcast, right?
Yep. And the Splinters podcast. And all right, one more thing. I got another podcast. It's sort of on hiatus, but it's a podcast called Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves.
Oh, wow.
I did an interview with Patrick Edwards, the incredible marketeer.
Absolutely.
Actually, that's up. Creativity-HFT. That's up. But we're going to relaunch in October with some other folks from different disciplines. We've got Alex Ebert, composer, and Matt Fraction, comic book writer. It's fun.
Oh, very cool.
What was the name of that again?
Creativity-HFT.com. Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves.
That's a riff on what was it? Who was the judge on Night Court? Harry Anderson. And so he was big in the magic circles, and he had a something about being left-handers and thieves. It was about truthful con artists. Like they didn't hide their craft, but they did their thing. Like it was an interesting thing. No, that's really neat.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's conversations with artists about how they think about their work, not their work so much, but how they think about their work, because they're just like you and me.
Yeah, for sure.
That's fantastic. Definitely give that a listen. Brian, where can folks find you?
Instagram is where I live on the web at Obst Woodworks, and Obst is just simply OBST. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me on Instagram at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
Well, you can find me at SeanW78 on most of those social medias.
Fantastic. So, Brian, do we have any reviews?
We do. We have a couple here. Regarding episode 468 with Blake Laurie and Jason Gallagher, great episode where they go into in depth on that big, massive chair and stool order that they had in Texas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of reviews here. One is from Dave De La Cruz, who, looking at his Instagram, he makes some chairs and some other good-looking furniture. Dave says, great episode this week, with a couple clapping emojis there. And then we have one from Ebbett Heil, who makes some boxes and some benches. It says, excellent and fascinating listen. Thumbs up. And then our buddy here, Joe Bass, Joe Robert Bass, this is his Instagram handle, says, great work, guys. I enjoy hearing the entire Ember story, which if you're not familiar with that,
the chair name,
yeah, that they came up with. It's an interesting, you have to listen the whole episode to get the whole meaning behind it. It's not really related to the heated cup.
not at all.
Which are fantastic, by the way, if you can justify it. And our last review here is from J.R. Lee, who has Instagram handle of the John Ryan Lee. He's a photographer and filmmaker. Interesting gentleman. And I think that's an ear emoji, listening emoji.
Yes.
Okay. So he's really listening. Yeah, we actually have a couple film people that listen to our podcast, which is great. And yep. If you would like to leave us a review, you can leave it on the pretty much anywhere you see MWA mentioned. It could be any of our Instagrams on the MWA podcast Instagram, or you could leave us a 5-star review on your podcast streaming device of choice, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, those kinds of things. And we would very much appreciate it.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.